Hello, and welcome to the Hopkins Podcast on Foreign Affairs. My name is Julia Ahn, and I am joined today by my fellow co-hosts Amanda Yuan and Zach Wheeler. Since the outbreak of COVID-19 from Wuhan in early 2020, Taiwan has succeeded in fighting the virus. Throughout Taiwan, there have only been 446 confirmed cases and 7 deaths to date. Today, we will be discussing what strategies Taiwan has implemented to prevent the outbreak and reopen, and whether these strategies can be extrapolated to other countries. We will also examine the politicization of public health and the importance of international cooperation in the face of pandemic, including challenges Taiwan has faced due to its exclusion from the World Health Organization. Joining us today as our guest is Dr. Chen Chien-Ren.
Dr. Chen Chien-Ren is the former vice president of Taiwan and a veteran epidemiologist. Dr. Chen served as vice president of Taiwan from May 2016 to May 2020. He was also the minister of health for Taiwan in 2003, where he oversaw the government's response to the SARS epidemic. Dr. Chen received his doctorate of science degree in epidemiology and human genetics from Johns Hopkins University and has since returned to research at Academia Sinica. Thank you, Dr. Chen, for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you, Dr. Chen, so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to join you.
So in 2003, the SARS epidemic struck Taiwan while you were the Minister of Health. How did Taiwan's previous experiences with SARS better equip Taiwan to respond to COVID-19?
Yes, I was the health minister in year 2003 when there was a SARS outbreak. And at that time, we found that there's many flaws and also inadequacy for pandemic control and containment system in Taiwan. So in this SARS outbreak, we found that our Ministry of Health and also our CDC organization has to be improved, and our Communicable Disease Control Act has to be reviewed and amended. And also we find that our healthcare system for infectious diseases needs strengthened, and especially the control of hospital infection. Also, we found that the supply of PPE was inadequate at that time. So after the SARS outbreak, we have quite a complete reorganization of our Ministry of Health and also our Taiwan CDC. And we also recruit more than 20 infectious disease physicians in our CDC. And we established our healthcare system for infectious diseases and designated hospitals for different geographical area. And we also strengthened this hospital infection control for all the 700 hospitals in Taiwan. And we found that this another stock of this PPE was has to be reinforced. So we add this annually a supply of PPE, including the face mask and also this protects any kind of protection gowns and so forth up to the year 2003. So overall, I would say that the SARS outbreak is a big lesson to us and also give us a chance to improve our entire system for epidemic control and containment in Taiwan.
Dr. Chen, Taiwan has done an exceptional job at combating COVID-19. So what strategies were implemented by Taiwan in combating COVID-19 that were essential to its success? You have spoken before about the Taiwan model. Could you describe that a little bit?
Okay, there are three important key elements in the success of COVID-19 containment in Taiwan. The first one is prudent action. The second is rapid response. And the third one is early deployment. With regard to this prudent action, we keep a very stringent surveillance of all the emerging infectious disease in the world, especially in this region, because mainland China is a country originally have different kind of emerging infectious diseases, such as SARS, H5N1 flu virus, that's avian flu virus, as well as swine African swine flu. So we keep very good vigilance of the any kind of emerging infectious in China. So when our CDC officer, they from this website, PTT, and they found that there's a report from a local physician of seven atypical pneumonia cases. And we consider that this is very serious and accidental and also emergent event. So we immediately informed the World Health Organization through our focal point of international health regulation. And we also informed the China CDC in order to confirm it and to remind them that atypical pneumonia, basically, in mainland China, it means there's a SARS. So it's very serious. So we give them the information and also a request for further confirmation. And in addition to that, from this December 31st last year, we already started our onboard quarantine of all passengers from Wuhan direct flight. So at that time, we consider our border control has to be strengthened. So we start to raise this travel alert to Wuhan and also to strengthen our border quarantine. And this including this health checkup as well as to have to fill out the so-called quarantine information form. And this including the TOCC, the history of travel, occupation, contact and cluster information. And so we try to strengthen our border control. And that's the prudent action is very important. So we stop this passenger to come to Taiwan in mid and January. So we stop this kind of imported case from China quite early. And the second thing is the rapid response. When we learned that there's a so-called SARS-like diseases in Wuhan, and we know that seven cases in the hospital for isolation and treatment, it means a lot of infected by the asymptomatic or mild cases in the community. So it's quite likely to spread in the community. So we requested to send two experts to Wuhan to have an on-site visit. And when they went there, they asked a question about this cross-contact tracing, and nothing had been done there. So it reminded us that it's really dangerous. So we started to have our hospital infection control program implemented in all the designated hospitals, and also to prepare this negative pressure isolation room for the treatment and the training of our health personnel. And in this SARS outbreak in year 2003, we run short of N95 masks. So we also check our stock of medical surgical face masks. And we found that we have 40 million face masks available for our medical health healthcare workers and also our CDC officers. But 40 million definitely is not adequate for all the people in Taiwan. And at that time, Taiwan can produce 2 million face masks a day, but Taiwan have 23 million people. So we think that, that's a bad sign. So we have to increase the production of face masks. So it took us around 2 months and to increase our production of face masks from 2 million per day to 20 million per day. So we have face masks available, but at the very beginning, we consider that only those who are at higher risk can purchase this face mask. So we have a so-called rationing system, and has that a name-based rationing system for the allocation and distribution of face masks and also other PPE. So I think this early deployment is very important, and also that a rapid response is also very important.
Yes, Dr. Chen, these strategies that you just described, do you think that they would be possible to replicate in other countries around the world? Or do you think that there are specific aspects of Taiwan that make these three strategies especially powerful within Taiwan?
Yeah, at the very beginning of this SARS epidemic, pandemic, and this, our experts from this, my alma mater, the Johns Hopkins University, they consider that Taiwan is at the second highest risk. China is one and Taiwan the second. The reason for that is that we have a lot of Taiwanese businessmen and workers, and they are working in China, and there's a very frequent exchanges between Taiwan and China. So they can see that Taiwan should be at very high risk. But I just mentioned about our border control, our contact tracing, and also the mobilization of hospitals and this early deployment of this face mask. And in addition to that, we also consider that contact tracing is especially important. SARS is different from COVID-19 with respect to its clinical picture. For the SARS, we know that almost all infected people will develop high fever. And high fever is a very good sign and symptom for this to identify this SARS patient. Unfortunately, for COVID-19, this high fever patient is only a tip of the iceberg. And a lot of infected people, they have mild or moderate symptoms or signs, or they even have asymptomatic. Asymptomatic. And these people are in the community, and they can quite likely to spread out the virus in the community. And that's the reason why we consider that all the severe cases with pneumonia were isolated and treated in the hospital. They are okay because they cannot spread out the virus. But close contact of the cases are very important. And that's the reason why we have a very stringent close contact tracing and tracking system. And all these close contacts has to stay at home, so-called home quarantine for 14 days, and they are not allowed to go out, and they will get this health care or other services care. And we also provide subsidies for those who have not income if they were quarantined, and that's $1,000 NT dollars, around 35 US dollars per day. As the subsidies. And so use this way, we try to identify the close contact. And sometimes the people have poor memory, they cannot recall very well about their 14 days before what activities or events they are engaged in. So we use this on the mobile phone to help them, a smartphone to help them to identify their location, and there are any kind of event or any person they kept in touch with. So through this way, almost for every identified COVID-19 cases, we can identify 40 to 50 close contact. Close contact means they have short distance. Outdoor is 1.5 meters, and indoor, that's a indoor, that's 1.5 meter, and outdoor, that's 1 meter. Short distance dialogue or talk or conversation for more than 10, 15 minutes. And we use this kind of definition to identify all this on a close contact and to inform close contact to stay at home. And they also get this on mobile phone services, and they will get a mobile phone interview every day, and they have to fill in their health status, temperatures, or any symptoms and signs. And if they have any kind of symptom or signs compatible to COVID-19, and we will send ambulance to their home to take them to designated hospitals. So through this kind of a very stringent contact tracing, and also we've got a very good compliance of this people. So fortunately, we can have a very good containment of the COVID-19. And I would like to share with you that in total, by now, we have home quarantined 140,000 people in Taiwan, for everyone for 14 days home quarantine and another 7 days so-called self-health management. And Among them, out of 140,000 people, only 28 got fined, got punishment because they did not follow this government instruction, and they may go out of home and they got fined and so forth, but only 28. So basically, people in Taiwan, they are quite good with regard to the compliance to our government instruction.
So we've talked a lot about the strategies Taiwan use with regards to acting very early, really encouraging people to stay at home, having its citizens able to follow those orders. Now that we've kind of, it's already almost the end of June, what has been Taiwan's strategy with regards to reopening the country? And how have you guys thought about preventing a second wave of coronavirus infections, especially if neighboring regions continue to report high rates of infection?
Yeah, by now in Taiwan, we have 445 cases, COVID-19 cases, confirmed cases in Taiwan. And among them are only 55 so-called domestically local infections, infected patients. And among them, only 10 cannot trace the infection sources. So in Taiwan, basically, we could keep very good contact tracing and infection source identification. So in Taiwan, at the very beginning, we have 2 weeks postponement of this winter vacation for all the school children. And after that, all the children go to school and all people go to work in Taiwan. We don't have any kind of a lockdown of any region or any community. And we consider that it's very important for us to do close contact tracing and quarantine of the close contact. And then the loss of liberty of among the 140,000 people in Taiwan can guarantee that the 3 million people in Taiwan can live in a normal way and so forth. It's have a daily life, regular daily life. So since there's no lockdown, we have no so-called strict definition of reopening. Because we always open with regard to the people go to work and students go to school. But we have very stringent so-called social distancing program. We ask people to wear a face mask if they were in this public transportation and they cannot keep social distancing. I mean, I just mentioned about this 1.5 meter indoor and 1 meter outdoor. If they cannot keep this kind of distance, then they have to put on their face mask. And that's the one thing. And the second thing is that we don't allow a large gathering of activities. For instance, in Taiwan, our Taoism people, they have so-called this, a parade that's of Mazu. And the Mazu parade, usually less than more than 200,000 people are gathered together, but we persuade them to stop it, and they stop it in spring, and they just reopened it recently. But they have a very good schedule. So originally, that's around 200,000 people get together. Now it's less than 20,000 people. So avoidance of a large scale clustering is also very important. So I think there's a keep social distancing is important for all the countries. Even in Taiwan, we don't have any cases, but we consider that once the people have good health behavior, then we have to ask them to comply and to make it them become their daily life habit. For instance, to measure temperatures daily, body temperature daily, and wash hand with soap frequently, and put on a face mask if we cannot keep social distance, and also a very strict the sick leave. Any workers and any student, if they have if they feel sick and high fever or have respiratory symptoms or signs, we urge them to stay at home, don't go to school, and don't go to work. And through this way, we can make this, you just mentioned about the reopening in any country can or any city can do it very well. I know that the situation in the United States is still very serious, but economic development is also important. If we can keep good social distancing, I think that people can go to work and go to school, but to reduce their unnecessary social activities, then everybody can live in a regular way.
You've spoken to the importance of compliance of the public with public health information provided from the government. So in the United States, unfortunately, it seems like public health information on COVID-19 has become politicized, with some Americans seeing the number of cases, the death count, and even policies such as mask wearing as political. So first, did Taiwan have this problem of the politicization of public health? And second, how might this problem be avoided in other countries?
Okay, well, basically in Taiwan, in this time, I would like to thank the central government, especially when I was the vice president, my boss, President Tsai Ing-wen. He respects professionalism a lot. And he also urges us to keep neutrality. Professionalism and political neutrality are very important. And in this way, the central government can collaborate with local government very well, because there's no any kind of political implication about this the containment of COVID-19. And the second thing is in Taiwan, we set up our central epidemic command center quite early in January 20th. We already have our central epidemic command center. And it means that under this central epidemic command centers, all the ministries, not only there's a Ministry of Health and Welfare, it's including the Ministry of Interior and Ministry of Transportation and Communication, and also Ministry of National Defense, all have to work together to contain this COVID-19. So these commanders have a very strong power to request a different ministry to help them. So it's a kind of inter-ministry concerted effort. So it's very important to have this kind of CECC. And this CECC have the authority to carry out containment of this COVID-19, and also have the authority to do this economic relief programs to implement this end programs. And furthermore, this is also very important. In CECC, they have a daily news conference. This means that every day they have report to the general public, to the people in Taiwan, what the situation in Taiwan now, and what the new regulation or new instruction to the people in Taiwan. And I think these are very important. And all of them, most of the people in this CECC, they are infectious disease physician, and they are biologists, and also this people they have quite familiar with how to do this hospital infection control and so forth. So professionalism is the main theme, that's the most important characteristic of the CECC. So through this way, in a democratic country, and I think Taiwan has a very vibrant democracy. And I think that in a democratic country, the most important thing is the transparency and also the openness. If you give the people the information without any effort to try to hide anything, then your transparency and openness will get this public trust. And the public trust is the basis for this public compliance to government, any kind of instruction or program. So I always say that 23 million people in Taiwan are really unsung heroes. They've complied to the instructions so well. And I think that the most important thing is our CECC, our commanders, and our all colleagues working there, they got this public trust. They got a very good public trust. And you can never imagine in a democratic country such as Taiwan, you know, our commander, Minister Chen Shizhong, Minister of Health, Chen Shizhong, you know, this is the supporting rate according to the poll is 93%. It's almost impossible. It means that he got almost everyone's support to do it. So in a democratic and a free country, I think openness and as well as transparency is very important. And please let all the professionals to do the job and not to be too much on a political involvement. And for the United States, I know that sometimes it's difficult because you are a very free country and people enjoy creative freedom. I enjoy my freedoms when I was at Johns Hopkins or in Columbia too. But I think that for this public good, I think that sometimes we all share each other, so we have to love each other and help each other. So sometimes I have to sacrifice my freedom or my liberties and then to help other people to prevent a gut infection. So this is a spirit of solidarity. I think the spirit of solidarity is very important for the containment of outbreak.
So we've talked about what's been happening in Taiwan domestically, and I wanted to shift gears a little bit. So why do you think international organizations or international collaboration is necessary for responding to COVID-19? In what ways has that helped Taiwan specifically?
Okay. Nobody can contain the pandemic disease alone. And virus respect no border at all. And for the time being, although Taiwan have no virus in Taiwan, all this patient has been discharged from the hospital, but our neighboring countries still have COVID-19, and especially recently in Beijing. And when we see the scenario in Beijing, we are really worried about that. So we have to help each other to contain this pandemic, COVID-19. No, everybody has to help each other. And until there's an all nations, all countries have no COVID-19, then Taiwan can say, oh, we are relieved now. But for the time being, we are not relieved. And so we have to help each other. And that's the reason why I just mentioned that since we have this have adequate supply of face masks in Taiwan. So we donate millions of face masks to all the countries in need of, especially their health workers in need of face masks, and we donate them to these countries, and this including the United States, EU countries, and so forth. And we consider if we can help them and they can contain the COVID-19, then all of us are safe. And it is a very good a saying that we are all families in the world. So I think that we definitely have to share. And our President Tsai Ing-wen always urges us and say that Taiwan can help and Taiwan is helping. And we also signed this bilateral statement with regard to the COVID-19 containment and R&D. And we would like to collaborate with the United States with regard to this experience and technology sharing and collaboration in R&D to develop this vaccines, antivirals, or other rapid diagnostic, and as well as we can share our most recently breakthrough to using the smart technology for the contact tracing and for the containment of COVID-19. So this is the attitude we have. No one can live as an isolated island and doesn't care about others. So Taiwan is determined to help each other and to determine to be involved in the international collaborative effort to combat against this COVID-19.
So you've talked previously about Taiwan and its position in the World Health Organization. I'm wondering, can you elaborate on that? How has that been challenging or changed the way in which Taiwan has approached international collaboration?
Yeah, Taiwan has been left out of this global health system of World Health Organization for a long period of time. We are left out as an orphan of the global health. And it is not good for Taiwan because we have the difficulties to get this information from this World Health Organization. And it also prevents us to participate all this technical meeting or even this World Health Assembly in held in Geneva. So it limited our possibility to get this good information about any pandemic. So it is bad to Taiwan. And another way, Taiwan has some good experience can share with others, and we are eagerly to help each others, but it also limited our possibility to collaborate with other countries. And we always based on bilateral relation and relationship to improve this global health. And I would like to mention one case that with this United States AIT American Institute in Taiwan, we have so-called that the GCTF, Global Collaboration Training Framework. And based on GCTF, in Taiwan, we held a series of workshops on global health, including the dengue, this Zika virus, and also the mosquito vector control, and the national health insurance systems, and there's health disinformation, how to tackle this health disinformation systems, and so forth. And we do our best and to invite every workshop have 50 to 60 there's an expert from 25 to 30 countries. We try to do that. But a lot of participants here said, well, you can do even more if you were in this World Health Organization and you can help us more. And this is true. So let Taiwan to become an observer of the World Health Organization. Basically, it's the so-called three-win policy. That's an World Health Organization wins, and Taiwan wins, and the international community also wins.
So Dr. Chen, we've talked a lot about the different ways that Taiwan has been able to manage COVID and even previously SARS. And one of the things that's really unique about the country is, of course, your background as a scientist and epidemiologist. So how has your background and training as a scientist informed or affected your decisions in political office?
My training at the Johns Hopkins University really helped me a lot. I'm quite old now, so I was trained from 1979 to 1982. But interestingly, the epidemiology of infectious disease I learned from Dr. Comstock at that time. It's still quite useful. And we all know that COVID-19 by now is an emerging infectious disease, and there's no diagnostic at the very beginning. And also, even we have the diagnostic, there's no antivirals and there are no vaccines. So we have to use so-called infectious disease epidemiology, ABC, to contain the disease. The ABC means this early detection and isolation and quarantine and hospital infection control. All this technology and all this experience are very important. And fortunately, I learned a lot from Johns Hopkins University. I would like to thank my professors there. And not only that, after I graduated and came back to Taiwan, I also have a lot of collaboration with my alma maters and colleagues, professors, and this including this different professors in infectious diseases. Thanks to this and all my professors there, and they give me well equipped me. And I think that it's very, very important for a modern government. And when there's any kind of complicated event occurred, and you have to invite experts and scholars and who have the experience to shoot the problem and to solve the problem, and don't rely only on this politician. So professionalism, I would like to mention, is very important. And when there was a SARS outbreak in Taiwan, and we fortunately have very good help from US CDC, and they send a lot of experts to Taiwan to work with us, the from morning till night, and work on the shoulder to shoulder, hand in hand. And interesting, when I visited, after the SARS outbreak, I visited the Health Secretary Tommy Thompson at the Washington, D.C., and he told me that, I thank him for sending CDC delegates to Taiwan to help us to contain SARS outbreak. And he said, CJ, do you know there's a lot of SOP of SARS outbreak control in the United States was written by those delegates sent to Taiwan. So it's a kind of win-win policy. So I think that let experts and professionals to do this outbreak contain is utmost important.
Dr. Chen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, but we have one last question. So a lot of our listeners to this podcast, the Hopkins Podcast on Foreign Affairs, are students at Johns Hopkins University. And many of them may have aspirations of leading a health organization for a country in the world one day, or playing some other role in public health. So what advice would you have for those students with those aspirations and interests based off your experience and your expertise in this area?
Yeah, I just mentioned that according to my academic training and also the administrative experiences, I consider that we have all the students in my alma mater. You are really brilliant and outstanding. And I know that only the top students go to Johns Hopkins, right? So the most important thing is that we have to learn as much as we can, and I get a very good logical reasoning. And more importantly, we have to realize that we cannot do anything alone, and we have to collaborate with each other. So interdisciplinary collaboration is very important, because you have to have open-minded, to be open-minded, and then to invite the old the people to work together with you. So this is one thing I would like to urge you, and not only to improve yourself, make yourself become the leading and outstanding one, and you have to make your colleagues become outstanding as well. And the second thing is that as a good scientist, a good scholar, I think you have the chance to be invited to do this on public services. And I would like to share with you a very good saying of Pope Francis. He said that the true power is services. So we all of us have to bear in mind that once we have the authority, we have the power. This is not only for my position or my promotion. The most important thing is the power. The true power is to serve people. So with this kind of belief in heart, I think that we can do much better to serve all the public in your country or even in the world. So I always reminded my colleagues or our young good friends, and we tell them we need to 2 feet to work very well in our entire life career. And the one thing is the wisdom. And wisdom comes from the learning, the knowledge. You gain a lot of knowledge and experience, but this knowledge and experience can be converted to useful program or project to promote health, to prevent the disease as well. And the second thing is another foot is this charity. You definitely have to have the charity and to care about all the people are suffering, especially as a least friend, at least brothers and sisters, and they are in need of your help. So I would like to share with you that I best wish everybody of you have the wisdom and the charity with you. And I believe that you will become a very important person in the future to help the United States and help all the peoples in the world.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chen, for coming on the podcast and also for your contributions to the scientific community to responding to COVID-19. We're really glad to have you here.
Yeah, this is my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Hopkins Podcast on Foreign Affairs. We hope you enjoyed it. This podcast has also been uploaded to YouTube for your viewing pleasure. Remember to follow us on social media at Hopkins POFA, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We'll see you next time.